And good morning, Upper Link Canal. You are tuned to KHNS Haines, Skagway, and Clukwan, and it's time for Art Matters, brought to you by the Alaska Arts Confluence, aiming to inspire a culture of collaboration by supporting artists and the arts for residents and visitors of the Chilkat Valley on Main Street in Haines and online at alaskaartsconfluence.org. The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Link Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. And today we have John Svensson and my co-host Henry Leisha in the studio. Good morning, John. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning. Good morning.
And today we'll have John Svensson for the first half, and then we'll have Jacob Wiersing and Matilda Rogers. And today we're going to be talking about sort of the history and legacy and future of arts in the Upper Link Canal.
Was that a question?
No. That's not a question. We got John here, and John, if you'd just like to talk about how you got started here in Haines, I guess not by choice.
Well, it was kind of I wanted to come here initially, but I'd never heard or seen of Haines,
right.
And my parents sent me up here when I was I just finished high school, and get me out of California and send me somewhere else to mm-hmm. spend my summers. And my father had a connection with Haines through Alaskan Indian Arts and Carl Heinmiller, and Carl offered to send Johnny up, send him up. And my parents sent me here, and that was about the end of Southern California as far as a place to live.
Right.
I spent my summers here, and then the minute I could break away, I actually moved to Alaska.
Right, and then your brother followed you up as well and worked at Alaska Indian Arts, and he still has a bit of a connection here in Southeast as well?
It was, Alaska Indian Arts employed me for two seasons,
mm-hmm.
and I met Sharon, my wife here, who was basically born in Haines, and I was an artist, but also a young climber and adventurer, so we traveled around a lot, and we actually moved to Juneau for the 70s because of the job opportunities, and that was what I consider the last golden age of Juneau, before they knocked the courthouse down and changed South Franklin and did all of that. So I worked at the Alaska State Museum and Fish and Game, and actually retired with the state as a surveyor with DOT over a 30-year period. I was on sort of retainer with those guys as a mountaineering surveyor, which is an interesting position that the governor actually made that position so I could hang off cliffs on the Skagway Road, and they needed a climber, basically. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of where I stuck as far as working with the state. I say on retainer, but only specific jobs where ropes were needed so I could stay on their work list and take the jobs that I deemed scary enough to not that have them put other people on.
Well, it seems like that that experience really has informed a lot of your art as well.
Definitely. Well, it's when I first came to Alaska, the artists were a Belmore Brown, Fred McAtance, Eustace Ziegler. Like, these were the guys, the painters that mm-hmm. did the epic, massive landscapes,
yeah.
Denali and all of that. And that's that really impressed me.
But, yeah, those McAtance are amazing.
Oh, golly. Like the color and mm-hmm. just the epic, made your heart pound when you looked at these things. And I was trained in a whole different technique in watercolor, the wet into wet, and it was pretty fast technique and more impressionistic than detail. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but being a climber, yeah. I would apply that technique to epics happening. I mean,
right.
People hanging off cliffs and anything that wasn't, I wasn't really painting for the... of course, there was no market then. I was just painting for the fun of it. And that kind of evolved into my more twisted, weird images that more climbers could understand than normal human beings. And so I developed a niche market through the American Alpine Club, Alpinese Magazine, and all these guys that went on to do the publishing and that kind of thing were fellow climbers back then. We were all just dirtbag climbers, dumpster diving, and kind of hanging out in Yosemite and doing the... If any of you have seen Valley Uprising, the movie Valley Uprising, I was in the middle of all of that. It was the sort of the evolution of Yosemite and like the insanity that was happening down there in the 70s, which was definitely, that movie is a historical document of that time period, but unless you can relate with that or not, that's where, kind of where I was and doing my initial cartoons and sketching Because art didn't matter, climbing mattered, and that
right.
was, so I wasn't focused on a market by any means, you know, just having fun with it.
Mm-hmm. And then when kind of moving up here and seeing a new environment, how did that affect your art with these kind of new landscapes?
Well, at the museum in Juneau, I was an exhibit specialist working on diorama backdrops, and that was far from, you know, the epic things I've painted after that, but I don't know, right away I noticed that so many people were so good at painting landscapes, like Whale's Tail at Lynn Canal, which I swore I'd never paint another Whale's Tail at Lynn Canal a couple of years ago, and that's what I paint every now and then. It's hard to get away from that, but so many people do that so well, that like Eagles in Front of Cathedral Peak, that whole theme that is basically highly commercial, but like I said, so many people were doing that so well that wasn't where I was aiming. And then the kayaking, the climbing, I don't know, it was just a natural transition into that kind of imagery. And then I had a following, too. You establish yourself as a certain kind of painter on that subject matter, and then word spreads in the climbing world, which is pretty small, really. My paintings have gotten to the point where a climber or adventurer could look at them and go, hey, that might be a Svensson, just because of the subject matter as much as the technique I'm using to portray that event or whatever it is. So, oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, anybody that sees Denali first, I did a bunch of Denalis with a mm-hmm. caribou in front. I mean, you have to do that stuff in the beginning to kind of gain control over what you're, like, the scene and what you're looking at. I mean, you gain the technique and then you add your critters. Yeah, definitely. And I still paint. I'm really fascinated with desert scenes. I paint campfires and the Mojave and that kind of thing. I'm a desert rat. That's where I spawned, in that area. And so I can't get away from that. And that's more the desert aspect is more therapy than anything. Mm-hmm. If I can't go there, I can paint it. And I've been there enough so I can paint it, so there's feeling behind it. And anybody that sat around a campfire in the desert would look at those and go, oh, yeah, that's Joshua Tree or something like that. And that's, again, the climbing market. And I mentioned it is a pretty tiny niche when you talk about who sees those things. There are a lot of climbers out there, but, you know, maybe there's 10,000 in the United States, and how many, you know, people are in the U.S. So it really isn't. I'm not reaching out to, you know, your general audience.
Right. And so that market is definitely, as you say, across the U.S. But kind of speaking about the market, what about specifically in Haines?
Well,
right. So then you've developed, you have a gallery now, which also showcases mostly Haines artists. I'm just wondering maybe how the gallery evolved.
Well, that was... myself as a watercolorist, my wife was a weaver in the beginning, and pretty well known for her pieces. And
her weaving is still on the KHNS. Yeah,
this might be one of the initial 1% for the arts. I'm not sure. That was almost 50 years ago.
40 yeah,
years ago.
Well, 40, I think.
But we bought this land from Carl Heinmiller,
mm-hmm.
and it was a corner lot out in Mud Bay, and one of our thoughts down the line was to open a little store with Sharon's weavings and my paintings in it. And then I wanted to, when that started to evolve, the idea, I decided to put a climbing wall on this building. And that designated it as a two-story building, which became a little more monumental. And then why not feature the artists of Haines, because we knew basically all of them at the time. And kind of go with that, rather than just our work, when people stop by, give them a good cross-section of what's happening here. And primarily Haines artists. We have 22 artists in the gallery now, and three or four of those are people that don't live here, but they've been here,
mm-hmm.
and that's important too. We don't do mugs and T-shirts, and you know, especially for the cruise ship people who've seen all that stuff by
yeah.
the time they get here. It's like, want to hit them with something new. And
yeah,
you know,
if they're making the trip all the way out to Mud Bay from wherever they're
yeah.
they're coming from, whether it's the cruise ship or from Skagway or the cruise ship in Haines.
Mm-hmm.
You want to blow them away.
Oh, no. But that's been really fun. And we've sort of become a meeting point for people hunt us down to see
yeah.
what we've got. And then other artists will hunt us down to see what we've got. And we're basically a referral service, too. We don't have a lot of room. So if we have two or three pieces by any given artist, we have a stack of business cards, and we'll just send those people on to meet the actual artist and talk to them, details if they want.
Yeah. for commissions and or just anything.
Anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of since starting the gallery, how has the art scene changed around Haines? Like, are you seeing different mediums explored, new artists? What has changed over the years?
Well, absolutely new mediums being explored. And just the use of mediums now in the last 50 years, I've seen just the way watercolor is treated and oils are treated and carving. And you can kind of relate that with the climbing world, like how equipment has evolved, allowing people to do more and experiment more. And definitely that evolution has been like Marley's dad, Greg. Like, uh-huh. He was this little knock-kneed geek when I moved here. I don't know what I have a new dad, 10 years, something like that?
Yeah, probably, I think so. John, can you just get a little closer to your mic?
Age, if not 10 years. But just seeing him evolve and what he's doing.
Yeah.
The silver work and the carving, and I mean, it's just amazing. And then running prints off of the templates for the bracelets. And I mean, that kind of thing, if you're around for years in one area, you see that. Not just Greg, but all the artists have, you know, been experimenting. And I think every artist gets kind of, well, I don't know, I'm talking for myself, get bored with the same old thing.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Whale's Tale and Lynn Canal is a moneymaker, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think if you're, if you're still evolving and trying to figure out what you're doing here, you sort of warp that into your own vision, and you can do a Whale's Tail and Lynn Canal, but you could do it at reds and purples, you know, I mean, kind of twist it out and just get a public's reaction. In a painting sense, it doesn't take forever. I can experiment that way, and you get a good reaction or no reaction. And in my mind, I mentioned this a little earlier, like you want to turn, when someone sees your piece hanging in a gallery or anywhere, the idea is to have them turn their head and look twice. You know, you don't want people just to walk by and say, oh, another pretty picture. You want them to look twice, and if someone turns around and like, what's that all about, and moves in on the painting and starts analyzing what they're seeing. In particular, what I do, I've been calling these storyboards. People make up their own stories. I have these climbers and situations, and people ask me, where is that? Well, it's here somewhere, but based on truth. And you make up your own stories, like these two little guys on the mountainside. Put yourself there and let them run with it. I mean, I've got the flash of the moment, you know, what you're seeing, but the whole story, they had to get there and they had to get back. And if you can engage your audience with the work, no matter what it is, not just painting, but any three-dimensional pieces or anything, that's kind of the objective.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much art and so much good art out there that to get someone to actually turn around and look at your piece, maybe over someone else's, that's a real achievement right there.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of an interesting approach, but has your art changed the way that you interact with the environment at all? Are you ever looking for new landscapes that you can paint later so that forces you to get out to a new area that you might not visit?
Well, that's for a couple of decades I was an international mountain guide, and I would take sketch kits. This is before the digital revolution, which is kind of, I think, catastrophic in a sketching sense, because you can run through discovering the video camera, where you could run, you know, pan a crowd in a third world country, and you've got how many frames per second, and you've got village scenes shot in 30 seconds, where otherwise we'd sit on a rock and sketch all that kind of thing. And I'd come back from these trips, and I'd have a whole series of South America, a whole series on Nepal, that kind of thing, and get that stuff down. Well, and those are exciting, definitely. Anything getting away from the Lynn Canal, the Whale's Tail and Lynn Canal. We live around this, and the fascination with that. But I'd lived for painting other countries, like subject matters. And I don't know. I've always maintained that I've talked to climbers about this, where if you look at a mountain, as you sit at the base of this big old massive mountain, and you analyze it, everybody pointing up there and picking out the route or whatever it is. And if you sketch that, if you sat down and even if you can't draw, if you sketch that mountain and your eyes follow those contour lines and it makes you kind of analyze the shapes, the way the shadows are. And then if you have that crumpled up piece of paper in your pocket and you're on that mountain, you can refer to that piece of paper and it would probably do more than a photograph because your hands followed those lines. And I've gotten other climbers to kind of look at it that way, too. I can't draw. Well, heck, you can draw a skyline. Anybody can see that, and especially someone that's examining something that they're going to be suffering on. You tend to, you know, like examine things a little more. And kind of approaching, where were we going with this? I'm kind of approaching it that way, as far as analyzing a subject matter. I could look at the Lynn Canal, and I can see it differently than other people, mainly because of the technique that I use in painting it, and maybe I'll twist things a little bit. Realistically, you look at a subject matter, and nature isn't boring, but as a painter, you look at it and like the tree's in the wrong place, the water's different, and you want to make it more exciting, and you can do that legitimately by not really changing the subject radically, but giving it a kick. And I think my kick sometimes is adding those little people as scale, and just putting someone in that situation so you know how big things are. And like the perspective aspect, like when you're way up in the air, you want to give the impression you're looking way down. And there's a way to do that. Like I studied perspective and all of that, and that's just part of any artist training. But I don't know. It's so much fun with me. I like to twist my own brain out. I look at what I do and like, holy cow, could this be real or is it too terrifying? Or I've had climbers look at my pieces and that's impossible. You know, they'd say, well, I don't know. Is there not?
Yeah, what I noticed, especially with some of your watercolors of skiing, is you really get the sense of speed and motion when they're flying through the air, flying down these slopes. What's interesting about that is because they are landscapes, but you still get this motion and this action in there, and that I guess provides some more context for that environment. You know, it's meant to be kind of a play area, an area where you're active.
Yeah, well, it's a split second in time, and that's and like you said, the action aspect. In another frame, they'd be gone. You know, and that like catching that half a second of what you really wish you could have caught. And like I say, these things are based on truth, and it's a and my other objective, I think, in the painting aspect, like I mentioned, so many people are painting so many things so well that it's that shot of adrenaline on any given epic or anything, kayaking, sports, anything. It's that you're painting it as it felt more than it actually was. Because you come back and you talk about your epics. If there was something crazy happened and you sit around a campfire and tell this story that is always embellished somewhat, and because you're entertaining an audience, you got people like, wow, what really happened there? And it's kind of, you have to experience it to sort of get it. But
Do you think that these pieces appeal more to people who are into kind of, adrenaline and outdoor adventures, or also for, people who just want to sit at home and have it on the wall and read a nice book next to it?
Both, I think. It's like the people that buy the paintings for just they look at it, it makes them feel good. Or like the, even though they don't get climbing or whatever's happening, it's like that taking a second look idea.
I think your market's expanded beyond just the niche climbing, because it also just speaks to Alaska, and not just the whale tail and the Lynn Canal, but the skiers and in the desert scenes, and even the fictional, more fictional aspects of some of the paintings, which I really appreciate. I mean, before getting into outdoor recreation myself, I always loved the action and the outdoor aspect of those watercolors.
Well, that's kind of what you're after, is that moment. Mm-hmm. And no matter what aspect of sport or anything, it's that we're all kind of after that, that little spark that gets you out there. But back to like how it felt, I've had climbers look at my, or I've got a few pieces that kayakers can look at it, and it's impossible what I painted. I mean, the full moon with a big swell and and humpback suspended in that swell, and the noisier kayak, that's absolutely you know, like off Earth, but I've had kayakers look at that and go, man, that's just how it felt, you know, and that's exactly what, you know, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
And swear by it. Like, it's now, I'm not just saying that because it's a pretty picture, but man, that's how it felt. And that's the whole, my objective, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost more real that way when you can capture the feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. And but there has to be an element in there that normal people can understand. I mean, you can paint a pastoral landscape with a breaching whale or anything in it to add that movement and scale. Otherwise, I'd have no market. I mean, I do have to think of what normal people look at and might want to purchase. And what I've been finding is over the years, I'm painting for myself and not the general public, like that whale's tail and the eagle in front of Cathedral Peaks. It's not a, I mean, I can do it, but it's not, that doesn't excite me. Tend to paint more insane climbing scenes, third world subjects, and finding that my market hasn't had a dent put in it because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people actually enjoy that because they're not used to seeing that kind of thing. It's kind of like that mug and t-shirt shop. You know, they come into Extreme Dreams Gallery, and I've got snakes in jars and human skulls and beheading axes and everything that would kick an Alaskan visitor a little bit out of what they've seen so much of. And shock treatment is basically what it's all about. If they walk out of the gallery and they... My objective is to have them remember the gallery. They don't even have to buy anything necessarily, but they're not going to forget where they were. And we throw in the glacier view and, of course, all that Alaskan stuff with it. But it's entertainment, pure entertainment. In the gallery, I mean, I really enjoy being around people and getting those kind of questions. You never know who's going to walk in the doors. And the same with the painting, like what you're going to see tomorrow. I'm at the brewery,
mm-hmm.
and those are selections of prints, small prints of existing paintings and paintings that I've done in the past that I've thankfully photographed these things at high resolution. I can do these little prints, and that should be a good cross-section of my particular insanity. I mean, that's pure entertainment, you know, something like that. I'll be there and kind of interested in reactions to that, because a lot of people in the brewery don't climb either, but they're in Alaska. I mean, a fisherman out on a boat, or what normal Alaskans do is epic compared to what most people do down south. I mean, totally epic.
Definitely.
And that's so everybody up here can relate with what I'm doing in that sense. I think the adventure aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you've kind of carved out this niche. You've got a unique style for artists who are, you know, might have good skills, but are kind of starting out. How do you develop a unique style like that? What was this an effort for you, or did it kind of happen organically, you know?
Well, it's always been an effort, because watercolor isn't effortless to begin with. I mean, it's supposed to be fluid and wonderful and just pull it off, but you know, oils, you can paint over the oils, you can add whites, you can do things that you can't do with a watercolor, and that challenge in itself is exciting. I was told by my mentors back in the old days that you should do a sketch a day. Everybody, whether you can draw or not, sitting at a restaurant on a napkin, draw a sketch of a day of something. And even if you can't draw, if you're into stick figures, it doesn't make any difference. You have a cup sitting in front of you, and you draw that little cup while you're sitting there. And if you do that, it's guaranteed, I don't know, within a season or whatever, you'll notice that things are happening fast. I mean, faster than that, like 10 sketches down the line, your stick figures will start to thicken up a little bit and your cups will become dimensionally better. But that, I think anybody, you know, people say, I'm not an artist. Well, heck, it's in everybody. It's a matter of applying that, that like visual aspect and the hand-eye coordination aspect. And if you can paint that cup sitting or draw that cup sitting on the table in the restaurant, get a good rendering of that, you're on your way. I don't know. And I was trained a certain way to paint, a certain style. And if my mentors could see what I'm doing now, it's become more illustrative, and they were more impressionistic with what they were doing. And I'm painting, like I said, storyboards. And these guys, I mean, they would look at parts of my painting and go, okay, Johnny got it. You know, like the washes in the sky or whatever it is, that part of it. But they just shake their heads if they saw the rest of it, like too much detail and like picking away at it. But that's what, you know, people go in their own directions, and that's how I depict what could have happened. It's soothing to me. Like in the winter, I'll sit down and paint these things, and I put my brain in a different dimension. I'm not even there. And to me, that's what it's all about. It's a meditative state, you just go with it and don't worry about the market. I mean, that's, I talk about that quite a bit. If you're worried about selling the painting, to heck with it. Just paint for yourself, and those are the best pieces you'll ever come up with. If you're painting for the market, well, you might have that lucky painting that maybe you should make cards of or something. That could be your golden shot at making the painting the money maker kind of thing. But as far as dwelling on that, I don't know. It's everybody's, all artists I've talked to are progressing. I mean, they're all like the gallery thing. It's so much fun seeing Haynes artists move along and
the evolution of the art. So even if your teachers don't like, or your style isn't necessarily what theirs is, the point I feel like of a lot of art and artists is to evolve. Mm-hmm. Right, and as far as like making someone take that second look,
totally
right, you have to do something that's different. Yeah. And part of that is the evolution of not of your artwork and also of art in general.
Yep. And I've heard recently there's some comments on, like, if you can, I'm working in glass now, making marbles and things like that, and it's the same approach. Like recently someone said, if you become competent at one aspect of what you're doing, don't stop. You don't assume you've figured it all out, because that just means you're starting to kick into gear. And that some of the old guys I studied under in watercolor, this Milford Zorns was, I'll bet he was 85 or something, and still anguishing over not having figured it out yet. This guy was internationally known. I mean, a really good painter. And he's like, oh my God, he's still trying to work with it. And but he was happy with what he was doing, but he knew he could go so much further if he had more time. And he made it to 100 and kicked the bucket. So, you know, but yeah, I think that's what it's all about. I mean, it evolves with you. You know, so 20 something artists now, and think of themselves in 60 years, like where they can go. And I think the main thing is, don't, if you like art, don't get frustrated with it, which I've seen too. Like, I can't paint, and nothing's selling, and that whole approach, and you just can't do that. I think if it's really in you, you'll. I mean, I've always maintained, if I was in prison, I'd be scratching things on the walls with a stick, you know, just because I draw. You know, I mean, anything. It's kind of in your blood, and that's how you. And you look at through the ages. In 100 years from now, if any of my paintings have survived, when you think about the paper goods and all that stuff, if anything's around, I'd be like tickle pink, or like a scratching walls on a paint, like images on a cave wall or something. I mean, that stuff's been around for a long time. But the marbles, that's what I like about the marble aspect and the glass. Long after Armageddon, glass is always found in the rubble. Mm-hmm. And these beads and things I'm making now could end up around Mad Max's neck, you know, like who's sifting through that stuff and, you know, find this. And that's all that really matters is, you know, Max doesn't know who built that thing or anything, but it's like an ornament. And the staying power of glass, for instance. And I think your next interview is a glass guy. I mean, you'd probably
maybe next month. But actually, I think that's a great place to wrap up for now. And we'll have for the next half the next generation of artists in Haynes.
Cool. And you know, any artist in Haynes, I encourage to come by Extreme Dreams, and I love yakking about this stuff.
Definitely.
And I'm a pretty good resource on a bunch of mediums, and then I would turn those people on to, say, Donna Cattotti, who's an oil painter. You know, I don't know about that, but if they want to know about it, I'd send them over to Donna, and that's kind of what it's all about. I think we're all one big happy family here, and the Haynes, to me, has gotten better over this place is, I think we're in nirvana here, and I don't know how many people really realize that, but more people I've been talking to are just, you know, like, they can't believe this place is so cool, and, well, I'm sure glad to be here, and
me too.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Well, John's gallery will be at the Haynes Brewing Company tomorrow. I guess it's already kind of up there, but the first Friday events are tomorrow, and John will be at the Haynes Brewing Company to talk about his gallery there, or his show.
Right? Sure, he'll be there to answer those questions.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, thanks for coming on, John.
Thank you, John.
We'll be back in just a few with Jacob and Matilda.
All right, been awesome.
I say you don't need a thing from foreign countries.
Is it coffee first?
Coffee. Thank you.
Awesome. Welcome back to Art Matters, KHNS's monthly arts outlook for the Upper Lynn Canal. If you're just joining us, we have myself, Marley, and Henry, Alicia here, and just joining us now are Jacob. Hi, Jacob.
Hi.
And Matilda.
Hello.
And this is the next generation of artists, or a section of the next generation of artists in Haines, and they will be at the Magpie Gallery tomorrow. And would you like to talk a little bit about what's going on there?
What's going on at the Magpie?
Yeah, so for First Friday, my mom, who's the owner of the store, she is putting on this little kind of like just a group of tons of entrepreneur and like musicians, artists of like kids in Haines. And so, yeah, we're going to have lots of people there just like playing their music, and Jacob, putting out all his stuff.
I'll be there with some clothing, brand new candles, and more earrings. Yeah.
Excellent.
So, Jacob, you've been working on your candles and earrings for over a year now?
Yeah. So I first made candles in fifth grade, so that's been 4 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they've always been evolving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How have they kind of been changing over the years?
So we first started with mason jars, and then last year we used like a new glass container that's more high end. And then this year we added a tin line that's like Alaska themed scents. And those, I think, I just dropped those off to Laura yesterday. And so they're either going to Skagway or they might be here for First Friday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You got the bifjordal business going. That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that takes years for some artists break into.
It does.
Yeah.
But I guess that's one of the great things about doing art in the Upper Lynn Canal now, and that there is a lot more communication and collaboration between Haines and Skagway.
Yeah, for sure.
And having some of the Haines artists have shops and booths over there.
Yeah, that's been really great, for sure.
And then, Matilda, tell us about your music. How did you get into music?
Well, I've always, I've just kind of grown up in a very musical family. We've always played music, and I've just kind of been exposed to that kind of stuff. So I just grew up singing, Queen. And, I've just always kind of had that, and just singing at the top of my lungs, mm-hmm. Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that Bohemian Rhapsody movie?
Yes. Oh my gosh, it's so good. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's.
And it sounds like you've been performing more. I saw you at the Northern Lights Showcase. That was awesome.
Yeah, I've been trying to get my music out there a bit more. I have a SoundCloud, which I've been putting my own original songs on, which is cool and different.
Very cool.
And yeah, so
very
I just
cool.
started that this year.
Mm-hmm. How have you been recording them?
Just at home on my computer. I don't even have a microphone yet, but I'm interested in getting one. And just writing my own songs on the guitar, mm-hmm. and then recording, putting stuff on top of each other, mm-hmm. on software, which is cool.
Right, just GarageBand.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally.
It's great. Those sort of programs and make it really easy to produce and start learning, because that's one of the harder parts about, you can learn to play an instrument and you can practice, but then the other side of exposure and getting yourself out there. And so something like SoundCloud, where you can easily put your own music up on the internet and have an easy place for everyone to access it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
Is there kind of a sound you're going for, or any influences for your music?
I don't know. I kind of like, I listen to just a lot of random stuff. Like, I don't really have like one sound where I only do like pop music. I don't really do pop music, or like pop or folk, or I don't know, anything like that. I don't really have one. It's just more whatever I'm feeling kind of at that moment, and just like, yeah, it's really, it's kind of just random.
Right. All about practicing, and, yeah, and the more you play.
Yeah. Finding it as yeah. well.
Got to get, totally. Find the melody.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See what I'm into.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of for young people in the arts world in mm-hmm. Haines, what do you think about the opportunities out there for learning new skills, for learning to make candles, for learning to make music? How have you kind of gone about that?
So I've really watched YouTube videos. Like, I researched how much it would cost and saw that my profit margin was there, and so I just started watching YouTube videos on how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of kind of the entrepreneurial side of it, how have you learned those skills?
It's been a lot of trial and error. I've had to convince my mom to let me try Square or PayPal, and just experiencing spreadsheets and stuff like that, seeing that that's too much work or that's not going to last long term, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy that process, working out those problems? Or?
Yeah. I mean, when it lasts for so long and it can't get fixed, then I get a little frustrated. But then once it just gets resolved, it's like a goal that I actually achieve, and mm-hmm. it's like so rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, finishing that puzzle, right? Yeah, a little bit of problem solving. Sure. I get that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then for learning music, have you had good resources for that?
Yeah, well, Haines is already like such a creative community, so I've really just grown up with like going to like these little fundraisers based around like art, and then the fair, obviously, like there's so much music just kind of being exposed again just to that, which is really cool, and mm-hmm. I'm like so grateful mm-hmm. to just be able to grow up in such a creative, artistic place. Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate how you appreciate that now. It definitely took me a while to really fully appreciate that aspect of how supportive and creative this area is, and the beauty and everything. I definitely remember being your age and being a little frustrated with being here, and I think that things have sort of evolved as well, as far as access to internet access really allows us to have access to the outside world while still being in, and give us perspective for what Haines, how special Haines is compared to other places.
For sure.
And can still learn and experience some of that outside world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely been a big evolution for Haines, as far as arts still and access.
Act local, mm-hmm. think global.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. got that perspective.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, a lot easier these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so with the Magpie, is this kind of a long term thing? Are you going to be there for more times throughout the summer, more First Fridays, things like that, or
possibly?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, Laura just asked different artists, so it's kind of, I approached her about this First Friday, and then she kind of evolved it to entrepreneurial, so yeah, it's kind of all up in the air, sort of.
Oh, that's great, so this is your initiative then, then too.
Well, yeah, sort of. Cool.
And then, you know, in terms of looking ahead in the future, it's got a good gig going here, it sounds like, but... You know, what would you like to get out of music? What would you like to get out of, you know, making these candles and these products? Where do you see yourself going with it?
I kind of want to, like, see it, like, more down in the States, and, like, people, like, know of Alaska Creations, and, like, more. It's, like, a global, or not global, but national sort of look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having the bigger picture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. having a store with, like, my probably one of the biggest goals right now.
Mm-hmm. So do you ship at all right now?
I do. So actually, I have a website, www.alaskacreations.net, and we have a good selection of clothing, earrings, and candles that we ship. Nationwide.
I see you're wearing an Alaska Creations shirt there. And so it's a collaboration between how many people are involved
in? Two artists, the Boron twins, Hannah and Haley. So they've both done amazing jobs.
Nice. So you consider them your employees?
Not really, because no,
it's more collaborative.
Yeah, because I buy the art from them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Are they commission or are you just contracting then?
Well, I don't really know. I just buy the art from them.
just buy the art. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and do you have any goals for music or where do you see yourself taking that?
Yeah. I just guess just getting it out there and becoming a bit more well-known. I don't want to...
Win the Tiny Desk concert.
Yeah, that would be so cool, honestly. That's my goal.
Tiny Desk concert.
Love that. Yeah. They like Alaskans, a guy from Anchorage just won.
So I'm just kind of thinking about that and thinking about how Alaska is getting on the map with art and with music. And so that definitely was a big, woohoo for Alaska, seeing Quinn on the Tiny Desk concert.
Mm-hmm. But you're not sending your SoundCloud to any big labels or anything like that?
Not now.
At the moment.
Who knows what the future brings, though. Yeah.
Well, that's great, guys. I'm kind of out of questions, I think, unless you had anything else you wanted to. Oh, Kay's got one.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm curious to know how both of you came into. How did you decide you're going to be? You know, like, oh, this is easy. I can market this.
So I started with earrings, and I sold my first pair to. They moved, but her name was Liana Scholl, and my mom and her were good friends. And then I did that with Nora and also Matilda for a year, and when Leon was, you guys were in London.
We were in third grade.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just
how it started.
Jacob's always been an entrepreneur and, like, super into, like, doing his own business, which is really impressive, actually.
Thanks. Yeah, and Lenise picked us up at the Rusty Compass, and then it kind of just snowballed from there.
Right.
Yeah, that's the first store we were in.
Yeah.
So it all started with earrings.
What's the name of the earrings?
So I have four lines, Adrift, Mixed and Match, Alaska Wood Earrings, and Charming. But the company is Alaska Creations.
And so each of those have different mediums, sort of? Or
yeah, so Charming is like charms, and then Alaska Wood Earrings is wood from Alaska that I've laser cut and hand painted.
Oh, cool.
And then Mix and Match is like beaded, and then Adrift is beads from glass and glass windows and other products, glass products from Ghana and Indonesia.
Wow. Like some beach glass from...
Yeah, and then they, like, use an old African bead technique to make these beads. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Are there any other products that you're looking into producing?
Probably not right now, just because high school, we're going into high school now, and I don't think I'll have as much time as I have had through the past year, so probably not right now.
Not at the moment.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, let me go.
Yeah, are your parents sort of, are you guys like separate little units, or are your parents involved in your businesses, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it's more so for me, I think I'm separate, but they are so supportive, and they're like always like, they're the first people I show my songs to, and they'll give me feedback, obviously, and like, yeah. So they're really just there for me, and they're always trying to set me up and, like, do cool things like this and shows, and I can't drive, so they take me everywhere.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my business, I have my mom and dad, for sure, are more incorporated because, like, credit cards and bank accounts. When I set it all up, I was 12 or 13. I had to be 14. And so it was all done under my mom's name. And so we just haven't changed it over. So, yeah, we're at least on, like, the billing and taxes and all, like, the counting side.
Yeah, it definitely helps having.
I am definitely more entwined with my parents for sure.
Mm-hmm. How old are you guys?
We're both 14.
Yeah.
We're 14 born a couple days apart.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Kay's really excited. That's awesome.
Good questions, Kay.
Yeah. So I guess I kind of thought of another thing. So are you getting feedback then on SoundCloud as well? Sometimes that's really exciting. Like you hear like, oh, I love that section and comments and
totally. Well, Mr. Baumgartner's story. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So our middle school science teacher, Mr. Baumgartner, was talking like he was telling me how his family from Colorado was like, oh my gosh, there's this really cool like young artist from Alaska. I think she's from Haines and everything. And they show him the song and it was me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I teach her. I know her.
That's my student.
Yeah, that's Matilda. So yeah, just people even like from like Colorado.
Yeah.
Which is funny how it like ended up like being my science teacher's family. But just like other people, not my friends. Like.
And then showing your friends. Family. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so
that means you're getting there.
Yeah, I've got like comments and stuff. It's cool.
You're spreading.
Yeah,
that's very exciting.
It is exciting.
Well, do you have any other suggestions for maybe the next generation of artists and musicians and suggestions for them? I guess so. We kind of talked about that. Like get on SoundCloud and practice and.
Yeah. I've always had mentors and very supportive parents. They've been amazing and couldn't ask for better parents.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. I think just probably going for it and like getting that like experience and educating yourself on like what you're interested in, I think is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Just so like
just putting yourself out there.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah,
right? And not being afraid of the feedback, right?
Because
it
could be good or bad.
It can be scary.
Oh, yeah. I've always been scared, like asking stores. And my mom would always say, the worst thing that they can say is no.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always just got to take a risk.
Is it scary performing at all? Do you have any anxiety about that?
Totally. I, like, every single show, like, even just coming on here, I get so nervous because I'm generally just like I'm just kind of a shy person, but you just gotta get up and go and just once I start playing and once I start talking I get more comfortable, but definitely butterflies beforehand.
Butterflies can can amp the adrenaline up and it can be really exciting too and and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a lot easier if you are confident in your abilities there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sort of like routines before you get out on the stage or anything like that?
Not really. It's mostly just like deep breathing. just
trying not to pass out.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks Matilda. And listeners, you can catch Jacob and Matilda tomorrow at the Magpie from
5 to 7.
Awesome. Check out their art and make it on downtown. Henry and I will be right back with a little wrap up for First Friday. And thanks, Matilda.
Yeah,
thanks,
Jacob. Thanks so much for coming
thanks
on.
For having us. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Well, Henry, that was a great art.
That matters. Was a lot of fun. I'm feeling very optimistic about the next generation of artists in Haynes. They're in good hands. I mean, Jacob and Matilda, 14 years old, already running their own businesses, already getting their songs out on SoundCloud and getting noticed in Colorado.
And having it make all the way back here, which is really amazing. And as John said, that's sort of like Nirvana at, level of artistic of artists in Haynes is I see it too.
It's an artist paradise for sure.
And so speaking of arts and we were talking about these First Friday events. John Svensson will be at the Haynes Brewing Company and Jacob and Matilda will be at the Magpie. But of course there's all sorts of things going on around Haynes tomorrow. The golf course, the Valley of the Eagles golf course, has mini golf and putting green for kids and adults. That's from 5 to 8. Some putt-putt golf.
Tons of fun. Wholesome fun for the whole family.
And then at the bookstore, the Mysterious Emporium, Mandy Ramsey has her new book out. So the book will be featured there, and she will be there signing as well. And right next door to the bookstore is Ampersand, and they have some Yukon artists in town. So expanding beyond the Haynes and Skagway to into Canada. Yeah, international network here. So I think that's also really exciting. And being able to have that collaboration as well.
Mm-hmm. Bringing people in.
Then elsewhere on Main Street, the Alaska Arts Confluence is having their Sidewalk Chalk Art Contest. Great time for that. Should be nice and clear. Through the weekend, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe some isolated rain showers, but I think we'll be good for some sidewalk chalk contests tomorrow.
We'll be able to stick around, won't get washed away too quick.
Alaska Rods will be open. The Hammer Museum has their family-friendly What's It contest, which I sort of assume is being like a name that hammer sort of thing.
Yeah,
like,
they have all these different kinds of obscure tools. Mm-hmm.
A cheese hammer.
I loved at the last one. They allowed you could use your phone to try to look up the tool. They were that obscure, and but it was kind of interesting. You could they had some of the tools had the patent number on it, but it didn't really help.
Yeah, no. So, then just down the street there from the Hammer Museum is the Sheldon Museum, and they will have their featured exhibit, Reconstructed Refuse. Four? I think that's the Roman numerals.
Yep.
Art by Rachel Euler.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating as well. Radio Shack has a kids' remote control game night. Not sure what that is, but I think that sounds interesting enough to go and check it out.
RC cars, maybe.
RC cars.
Yeah, rock 'em, right. Sock 'em robots.
I don't know. Maybe drones. Who knows? And then the Chilkoot Indian Association will have shuttles from downtown to the dock, and they'll be talking about the Portage Cove Trail and Waterfront project, which is coming up. And then Julie Vance's clothing will be at the Port Chilkoot Distillery, and that's about it. Wow, all the way up to just 11 o'clock, so we'll have... You're listening to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Clukwan. This has been Art Matters. Catch us next month on Thursday after Soundwaves before First Friday. Thanks, Henry. It's been awesome. And thanks, listeners. Here is the World Cafe.